Wake up, everyone. It's time for the Steve Noble Show, where biblical Christianity meets the everyday issues of life in your home, at work, and even in politics. Steve is an ordinary man who believes in an extraordinary God, and on his show, there's plenty of grace and lots of truth, but no sacred cows. Call Steve now at 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Or check him out online at thestevenobleshow.com. And now, here's your host, Steve Noble.
Well, of course, you know that usually once a month I go up to the Museum of the Bible. I take the track up there and stay the night, and I usually get to bring some guests, and you usually hear them on the show when I do the show from there. See, there it goes again. And so I am going to, we're having some strange technical things going on. Just take your earphones off. It'll make it easier. And so I'm usually the one, I go up there and then have some guests that go with me. And then we do the show together. And then we always get some folks from the museum to come on and some of the people involved with the exhibits or what have you. And then that's a way to kind of bring you into that world and educate you about it and encourage you about it and challenge you about it. But today, instead of me going to the Museum of the Bible has come to me down here in Raleigh, North Carolina. And I've had a chance to meet a lot of different people that work with the museum over the last, really over the last almost 2 years now. And one of those is Ryan Smith, who's been involved in a lot of different things at the museum and is one of the most passionate voices for the museum. And has poured his blood, sweat, and tears into it now for 2.5 years. And so Ryan's down here, and we're talking to a bunch of different people who are interested in helping out with what's going on with the museum and getting the word out. And so it's saving me a trip, Ryan. You had to make the trip this time instead of me.
Absolutely. I guess I took the track, right? Is that 85-95? Is that what the track
is? That
means?
Is, yeah. That's just, it's up and, up,
it's
and
a
back,
good track.
Up and back. Yeah, not too bad.
There's a track that you can only go 55 on. So
yeah, that has a tendency to have an impact on your day. But anyway, I appreciate you being here and certainly appreciate your welcome. Your kind of tireless work on the Bible. But let's kind of do a little background here. So, because I know you, but the people on the show don't. And so how did you get involved? Because you've really been involved a lot. But I want to go there first, and then we'll kind of unpack. Because I had a couple of guests just recently, two PhDs from the seminary. One's also a full-time pastor. And I ran them around at the museum for a little while just to get their bearings. But then when they spent 2 hours the next morning with Ryan, they were both completely blown away by the things that he pointed out and the things that he shared. So we're going to get there too, but let's start. Let's begin, as they like to say.
Yes.
And how'd you get there? How did it all start?
Well, I was born and no, just kidding. No. So the Museum of the Bible had an event in New York City where I lived in 2015. And now to go retroactive a little bit back before that, I actually lived in Atlanta, Georgia. Worked for a global partner of Google, ran the office there with about 30 sales reps, and we sold Google AdWords and a lot of other things. And Museum of the Bible actually had an event called Passages. So Passages was a traveling exhibit that went to 6 cities in the United States and 5 different countries, the Vatican twice, Cuba twice, Argentina once, Germany 3 times, Jerusalem, Israel once. But it was in Atlanta, Georgia, and that's where I lived. And this was like 2011, I think it was. And I literally, the last day that it was open, I like kind of heard about it, and I went at the last day, literally like the last hour. They were starting to literally take things down, and I just went through it and kind of like, wow, that was pretty cool. But the name Passages stuck in my head. Yeah. I didn't know it was called Museum of the Bible, and I just said to people, this is really cool. It's really awesome. That's great, and I never heard about it again. Well, fast forward to 2015, 4 years later, I was invited to the Museum of the Bible event. Now it was called Museum of the Bible, so yeah. I didn't hear Passages. And went to the event, saw...
So you didn't connect the two?
Oh, definitely not, because the name, you know, the name just kind of, you know, right. Passages. I said, hey, there's something called Passages, but I didn't, you know, link it, and it wasn't explained there either. And so went there that night in Tribeca area of New York City, and I was like, this is incredible. I'm like, is someone kind of like playing like, you know, either punking me or are they, you know, am I on candid camera kind of thing? Yeah. Because everybody my whole life, I was in business my whole life, worked for Microsoft, worked for a global partner of Google, worked for ADP, had my own business. People said, you know, you need to like market the Bible. That's what they would say to me, you know, while I was in business.
Right, right.
And I would laugh.
Christian,
oh, there's no job. There's no job like that. You know, are you kidding me? What are you going to do? Sell Bibles? You know, whatever. So when I saw this, I was like, this is absolutely amazing. So I literally started volunteering my time just immediately after that.
Because you had some Christian education background. You went to Bob Jones.
I went to some private schools, you know, so I had Bible class.
A little seminary? Did you do a little seminary too?
I did 2 years in seminary, and then went out to in Los Angeles, California, where I was in a church out there as a deacon. Was there for about 6 years out in that church. So, you know, yes, I'll call myself a businessman layman. You know, I was never a formal pastor, let's say, or something like that. But, you know, taught in the youth groups and stuff like this, and worked at churches as interns or stuff like that. But here I am sitting there starting to volunteer for this thing called Museum of the Bible. And there was no building. I mean, this is 2015. This is early 2016. I mean, there was literally a hole in the ground two stories deep of us building the base of the building all the way up. You know, we merged three buildings together. So I started volunteering my time. About 2 months later, they hired me. And, you know, I said, what do you want me to do? And, you know, and they said, travel around the world with the chairman of our board and our president at that time and help in every way that you possibly can, because we got so much stuff to do that it's just there's stuff all over the place.
And that would be Steve Green, Hobby Lobby, that whole group.
Steve Green, the president of Hobby Lobby, is the chairman of our board at Museum of the Bible, and Carrie Summers, president. And, you know, that was 2.5 years ago now.
Yeah,
you know, coming approaching 3 years ago.
So that must have been pretty exciting. What were you running into just generally the response to and explaining what in the world is this thing?
Absolutely.
But the response.
You literally, it's like trying to explain an orb that doesn't even exist in the middle of your hands. It's like, here, there's this thing, and someone says, I don't even know what you're holding because there's nothing there. We're like, there's going to be this museum, and it's going to be amazing, you know, and it's going to be 8 stories, you know, 6 stories above ground, 2 stories below ground. It's going to have all this technology, and people are like, okay, you know. So you're literally going around the world, you know, to awareness events and partner agreements and visiting other museums, so talking to other museums about us, going to Israel, taking people to Israel so they can see some of the things that we're going to have in the museum that would tie into Israel, because we have something called the World of Jesus Nazareth, like a first century replica of Nazareth. So we're doing all these things. And you're literally trying to explain something that doesn't exist. I mean, imagine that. You're selling good air. You know, you're not selling air, but you're trying to get people to be excited about air. Now,
and we've never seen anything like that about the Bible ever before.
Sure.
So there's no context. There's no comparison.
The context is the Bible, but people are like, oh, well, that's a book that I open up and it has, you know, 1,000 or so pages in it. What is the museum? Would there be 10,000 of those? I mean, after about the fifth one, I'd be like, I don't need to see, you know, I've seen them all, you know. Yeah. So we had to say, no, you're going to be able to walk through Nazareth. You're going to be able to go into the, you know, Old Testament and be with the story. I mean, people are like, what?
Yeah.
So you have to kind of start talking to them. And now when we had, you know, more videos and, you know, virtual reality experiences or stuff like that, you could kind of get them into the scene more. But it was still something where you're literally building something from the ground up, trying to talk about it.
Yeah.
With people that are traveling around the world that are, you know, if you will, you know, the originators.
Right. And trying to get people to understand what's going on. This is Steve Absolutely. Noble on the Steve Noble Show, talking to Ryan Smith from Museum of the Bible. Brought the Museum of the Bible to Raleigh instead of me going up there. A lot to talk about. Some great content. Really, really exciting what's going on. We'll be right back. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show. Instead of me going to Washington, D.C. this time around to talk to our friends at the Museum of the Bible, the Museum of the Bible came south, so we've got
Ryan brought Smith all 430,000 square feet down here on
a
truck.
Yeah, that would be pretty cool.
Wide load. I did pass one of those, so it wasn't me, but yeah, we could bring that down here if you want us to do that, Steve, next radio show.
Ryan and I think we met originally maybe at a National Religious Broadcasters Convention or something, and then just crossed paths here and there, but just trying to throw our shoulders to the same plow we're already there with the Museum of the Bible and getting the word out and educating people, and especially before the end of the year, if you can put this on your schedule, if you can get there, if you can drive there, if you can fly there. And I would always say, would you tell Ryan that they should plan really first go around basically two days in the museum?
You could say that. There's 9 8-hour days worth of content, so 72 hours if you want to see everything. Now there's some analytics out there that are literally planning right now.
Right.
9 8-hour days right now.
Right. Oh,
but
exactly
the average
right.
person, okay, so you know, your pragmatics and your extroverts, they're probably going to stay somewhere around a full day. Some of them stay a half day. But 2 days is good. Why? You can see, you know, the big picture of the building in, let's call it, the morning of the first day that you're there. Then in the afternoon, you start to go down into the weeds of some stuff that you like. And then that second day would really get you deep into a lot of different things. And you can take your time on all the videos and things like that. So that, 2 days would be good.
Yeah, because that's one of the things that you see stuff, but you're so anxious to see everything and kind of take it all in. And then you go back. It's like this big, massive buffet on multiple floors. And you pass through it all just to kind of see what's there. And then you're like, oh, yeah, I got to go back and taste this and have that.
But I say in every way, even if you had 2 hours, come.
Yeah.
Because in 2 hours, you'll be blessed. You'll see more than
Absolutely.
You thought you could see, and it'll be interactive. And it really, you'll walk out of there with a different thought of what it was. Most people think, like I said, it's going to be a bunch of books and, you know, dusty old books.
Well, we hear a museum, and you're like, blah.
Huh.
But there's any, but it's not. It's like if you take a museum and then you fold in Disneyland and Universal Studios and stuff.
Edutainment.
Yes, there
entertain,
you go.
Excellent. Entertaining and educating.
And educating. All
and
the
I
same
speak
time.
At about 500 words a minute when I try to do a tour because people can listen that fast. They say you can listen at 500 words a minute. So if someone talks at 200 words a minute, the person's mind has 300 words a minute to try to figure out to do something. That's why they get kind of bored. So I try to talk faster.
There you go. That's excellent. Thanks for that knowledge. I'm going to use that on the radio all the time.
Right.
So Ryan traveled all around the world and was helping out Steve Green and kind of building interest and working with people around the world. And then now is just spending a lot of time at the museum. And we met a couple years ago. And of all the people that I've met, really, I think you're the one that is most passionate about it, who's really on fire. Everybody is, but your level of commitment and your passion about it and your desire for it, really a heart cry for you, has just been wonderful to be a part of and to get to know you and now working with some folks that I know down here, everybody trying to put our shoulders to the same plow.
It's awesome.
For the sake of the kingdom, for the sake of the Bible, for the sake of the Lord, for the sake of our witness, and of course, all of that we can do through the Museum of the Bible. But the process for you... What was it as you got more educated, as it started to come together, and then sure. at the grand opening last November, why are you so passionate about Museum of the Bible?
I mean, the mission statement alone, to invite all people to engage with the Bible, is something that literally you can wrap your arms around for the rest of your life, and you never get to the bottom of that. The depth of that and the profundity of what that statement is, you know, and engagement is three things. See something with your eyes, hear something with your ears, do something with your body kinesthetically. When you can engage people with the Bible in that way, they learn in a level that, I mean, you could walk into the world of Jesus of Nazareth and stand inside a synagogue. We have removed the fourth wall. You are not watching a play. You're in the play.
Yeah.
You read Luke 4. It's different than you've ever read it before, because when Jesus was read from the Torah and he sat down and said, the law is now fulfilled in your hearing, you're in the synagogue. You can see, I understand this better. So that kind of thing, you know, you literally could see for the rest of your life the hundreds and hundreds of millions of people that it can engage with the Bible in and outside the walls.
Yeah.
With virtual reality that we have and all sorts of things. I mean, we went to many different countries, and I can remember being in those countries thinking, man, if we had a virtual reality app, you literally would have hundreds of millions of children and adults and everything engaging in virtual reality world, which we do have a virtual reality ride.
I did that last time I was there.
You can be
totally
in Israel.
Mind-boggling.
It's the cheapest way to get to Israel by standing, sitting, you know, whatever way you want to do it, right in Washington, D.C.
So. And that was all the whole purpose of that, the VR thing, and I talked about it on the last show when I was there last month, is you basically, most of that is to walk where Jesus walked. And because it's virtual reality, listen, you sit there on a little seat, on a little rotating stool, and you literally will turn around. You'll look up, you'll down, you'll do a 360, because the VR, it's just actual footage. They had 10 high-def cameras. I had the guy on that designed it all. You're there. It's very it's immersive. It's crazy.
Absolutely.
Just like the whole museum. But the thing about it, I've had, I was just up there recently. You met Stephen Wade
yes.
and Tracy McKenzie, PhD-level guys. I've had 9-year-olds up there. I've had my own kids up there.
And are you equating a PhD with a 9-year-old?
Well, I am in this way, that they're all blown away by it. For
Fair
different
enough.
Reasons in different ways. So
Fair
you have
enough.
Highly educated, deeply and profoundly deeply thinking theologians at a PhD level.
Absolutely.
Who are blown away and taken in by it. And then you got 9-year-olds who don't have any interest in their smartphone for the day.
Yes.
Completely blown away and taken in by it. And that's what the Holy Spirit does. It does different things with different people all at the same time.
That is the cool thing. When I do a tour, a lot of times when there's kids on the tour, I will not go to the children's area first, because I want to use that as like my way if we need that.
Yeah.
And sometimes, most of the time, we don't ever even get to the children's area with the kids on the tour, because they are so taken in by everything else that still is entertaining and educating them and keeping them engaged, which is, we love it, because that's the mission statement all in one. And they literally go home and you have people text me, email us, send letters to us saying, my child is so much more engaged. They were doing the action of the story, and now they talk about it. And they talk about it when they're away from the museum. And the kids, the Bible is really cool. I mean, not that that's a theological term, the Bible being cool,
but it
pulls
them
in. For a kid to say, the Bible is cool to them, that's as deep as a theologian saying, the Bible has depth to it.
Yeah, absolutely.
So
when you're giving a tour, what exists in the Museum of the Bible for you, having been around it now for a while, and giving, like, we're figuring that out over the break, right, probably at least 500 personal tours. What gets you stoked? What are the things in the Museum of the Bible that you get so excited about, yeah, and you're so excited to tell
so
people
many
about?
Things I could talk for hours, but one of them is illuminations. When you look at a room that is a 360-degree panorama of the room, every book from floor to ceiling is a book of a people group with a language in the world. Okay, so imagine being in a room with floor-to-ceiling books, like a library, and every book has a color, and literally half the walls are yellow books. And those yellow books mean that is zero verses of the Bible in that language. Okay? There are about 7,000 languages in the world. So about half of that room doesn't even have one verse in the Bible in their own language. You know, so that room really gets you to see what is the past, present, and future all in one room.
Yeah.
Because you got the past, what's done. You got the present, what's being worked on right now. You got the future, where are we going to go? By 2033, the plan is that every single language in the world can have a Bible. I mean, you think we will still be living when that can become, yeah, a reality?
Everybody I've walked into that Incredible. Room. So this is like an oval-shaped, a kind of open-backed library, right? And literally the top of the bookshelf is probably 10 feet off the ground.
Easy, yeah.
And on one side you see a couple different colors. You see a darker color and a lighter color. And if you pick one of those up, you'll see on the binding what the language is. And then you open it up and it's either got the entire Bible or perhaps just the New Testament. Yeah. But half the room, all the books, which are supposed to be Bibles, they're all yellow. And you go over and you pick one out, and you can do this, put your hands on. You pick it out, it tells you the language, and then you open it up, and it's a full-size book,
yep,
that's completely empty.
700 languages of the world have a complete Bible, 15 only a New Testament, the rest of the world absolutely not.
Absolutely nothing. Great. And then all of a sudden, visually, you realize, oh my goodness, this is one of the biggest problems we have on the planet Earth, is there's so many people that don't have one lick of scripture at their disposal. And you see it, you walk into it, you experience it at the Museum of the Bible. We'll be right back.
It's great.
Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show, talking about one of my favorite subjects. And usually I have to drive a little bit to talk about this subject. But today, the subject came down here to me in Raleigh, North Carolina. Ryan Smith is here from the Museum of the Bible.
Yeah, no.
You are the subject.
The subject is Museum of the Bible.
Yeah, the subject is the Museum. The subject is Museum of the Bible. And ultimately, the subject is the Bible itself.
Sure.
But Ryan has been very involved with the museum for about 2.5 years now and was working side by side with the Greens and traveling all the place with them. To kind of leading to the launch, and now as it's up and running, doing tours and advocating and trying to encourage people and get people educated so they know. Because oftentimes, Ryan, have you found, and I'm going to go back to this question, we kind of opened up with it, people's reaction is that it's got to be, for me, it's been a little frustrating because a lot of people simply don't know about it.
Sure.
And when they think about it, they're thinking Museum of the Bible. And they go, museum, but that's so far from reality, it's not even funny.
When people come, to see the thing when they come to when they leave, literally the conversation, here's normally how it goes. They come in, okay, hey, I say, you know, how long do you have? Oh, we maybe have 30 or minutes to an hour. Okay, so I start touring. About 15 to 20, maybe 30 minutes in, they say, make it 2 hours.
Yeah.
And then we make it 2 hours. And at the end, I say to them, let me guess. You thought you were going to come here. It's going to be a little hokey. You didn't really know if you wanted to come. Now you're blown away. You wish you would have brought 30 people with you, and you're coming back with all your family because this is the most amazing thing you ever said. They said, how did you know? I said, I have this conversation every day of my life for the last year. So that's literally what happens.
I'm glad you used the word hokey because I'm gonna translate this into the Christian movie world. In the Christian movie world, we know when a new Christian movie comes out that the odds are it's going to be a B movie. I mean, quality-wise, all right? Great message, gospel may be presented or not, and we're like, yeah, we need to support it, you know, but, you know, we just, our standards are so high in a media-saturated world and where we're so tech-savvy and we've got so much tech at our fingertips, our standards are super high, so we kind of, we grin and bear it.
Sure.
And so the people think it's hokey. Some people go down to Orlando, they go to the Holy Land experience there, which I'm going to call hokey. I haven't been to the Creation Museum. I haven't been to the Ark Encounter. It looks like it's really well done. But from what I've seen, nothing, I'm telling you, nothing is in the same league as Museum of the Bible. There isn't,
thank you,
there isn't an ounce of hokey anywhere. And people, everybody I've gone there with, they're like, this place is so nice. Besides the content, which is unbelievable, besides the the engagement factor, which is unbelievable. Just how nice the facility is. Mm. They didn't spare. They didn't spare a dime. It's all done incredibly well, and all that you do, whether you eat or drink, to all of the glory of God, and every square inch of that place was done to His glory. It's a spectacular and beautiful place. And and again, the challenge is, how do we communicate to people just how rich this is?
Yeah. I mean, the only way, really, is to come see it. Because when you come see it, it's like saying, you know, explain something like going to the Super Bowl to someone. Sure, you could say, there's this game, and there's this football, and, you know, but to be there, to be in that moment, you know, it's like saying, you know, in Disney World, same thing. Like explaining even when you go into church. Try to explain to someone that's never been to church about people worshiping together, about people singing together, about hearing someone speak from the Bible. How does that even, you can say it.
Sure.
But once you're there, you go, I understand this.
And experience it.
You know,
right.
Literally,
so you were talking about some of the highlights that when you're touring people around.
Yes.
And we started off with the biblical languages area, which is called?
Illuminations.
And so you move from that. So what are some of the other highlights that get you really
jacked? I mean, obviously, I love the things that really engage people. I'm big on saying this word over and over. The mission statement of Museum of the Bible is to invite all people to engage with the Bible, get them to see some with their eyes, hear some with their ears, and do some with their body. So when we can kinesthetically and visually and auditory engage them, these are things like virtual reality experience. You're in all those worlds. This is Washington Revelations, the fly-through ride. You're in that experience. When you're in the Hebrew Bible walkthrough, folks, 30 minutes where you walk from room to room through the stories of the Old Testament.
Now, what does that mean?
Oh, it is an area where you go in and we start you in creation. Now, it starts off, you think you're watching a movie in creation. Then something happens and the room changes. I'm not going to tell you what, but the room changes and you literally now are in the scene.
You're going to walk through.
And you have to engage the scene. And literally the characters are all around you. And you are walking through a wall of water, the Red Sea. You are going past the burning bush, Moses in the burning bush. I mean, you're not hearing about it or you're not watching it on a video. You're walking past it.
Yeah, you're in it.
Yeah, so that's where we say remove the fourth wall. So when people now, when you read the Old Testament, and sometimes the Old Testament, you know, it's tough.
A lot of us struggle with
that. You're going through those passages. But now you're like, wait a second. That was the place where I went to here, you know, or where I went to here in the Museum of the Bible. I could see kids, literally, their eyes are just bugging out. They're like, are you got to be kidding me? You know, this is something now they see. They come out and they go, wait a second. The Bible's real, you know, like I lived it. I wasn't reading it on a piece of paper.
Listen, the Bible is usually something you can pick up. You can read it. You can listen to it. You have the audit. But to actually now let's take the story of the Exodus and how do we insert ourselves into that? You literally can't
see, hear, and do,
but you can now.
Yeah.
And so that one, again, from a 9-year-old to a 17-year-old to PhD guys, they walk through it and they're like, oh man, because it's an experience that they can't have otherwise.
I've had countless seminarians say, okay, look, I've got an MDiv and I went to whatever, 5 years of schooling and I learned more about the Old Testament right there in 30 minutes, I think, than I did in any 30 minutes or even month of seminary, because it all came together in one story.
You get the story, right, you get the narrative
that's
walking you through there.
You can piece it together.
So you see this broken relationship that started in the garden and then God's desire to repair that. And then you know where it's going because we know the story, so you know where it's going. So there's that. So what about the history floor? Because this is really impactful, and a lot of people
miss this. The history floor is kind of interesting because you'd think, oh, history, that's going to be the one where all the dusty books are or whatever. Well, we start you off in what's an 11-minute overview of every place, basically all the places where the Bible was written throughout the world. Dave Stotts drives you around in a Jeep and some other cars.
That's the guy from Drive Through History,
right,
all those videos.
Really cool, kind of like Indiana Jones, if you will, riding you around all the places where the Bible is all throughout the world. Then you go into the chronological walkthrough of the Bible, and now you're chronologically going through the Bible from things outside of the Bible, talking about it, explaining the Bible, to things inside the Bible, talking about explaining the Bible, throughout history, all into, you know, Martin Luther and the Gutenberg Bibles and Gutenberg Press and all these things, all the way up into the modern day experience of Illuminations, Bible translation. So we crescendo you, if you will, into the room that is the highlight of that floor. You know, you start with where all the places where the Bible was written, chronologically go through it, and then say, what's happening right
and
now?
And there's also Bible transmission, how it was brought forward.
We have an actual Jewish rabbi on the premises sitting there showing exactly, He is literally hand scribing a Torah as it's been done for the last 3,300 years. There are so many people.
I watched him last time I was there.
People love it. I mean, people just sit there for 15, 20 minutes asking him questions, getting him to write their name.
There
was
a Jewish family talking to him when I walked through. Because that's the other thing about it that I want to make sure we talk about is this isn't just like a bunch of evangelical Christians. You've got all kinds of people coming through. You've got Protestants, you've got Catholics, you've got Jewish people.
We have Jewish funders, we have Catholic funders, we have Protestant funders, we have people that don't even have any Catholic faith like that. Yeah,
which is really incredible. So, but talk about some of the, if we want to call them relics, some of the museum pieces, some of the incredibly old pieces. Talk about that.
There's so many to start with, but there is an illuminated manuscript from the 1330s called The Hours and Psalter of Elizabeth de Boone. Now, this is an interesting story because this is an illuminated manuscript. So it's not only handwritten, but hand-painted with gold leaf on top of it. So one page is more than a family would make in their entire life. Yeah. Okay, so the entire book of that is only for the super mega wealthy. Well, the de Boone family had this book commissioned and passed it on as an heirloom, kind of like as you would a Bible. And this book ended up getting lost because there's only one of them. And it ended up going to an auction. And Steve Green, the chairman of our board, bought the Bible, donated it to the museum. And we were able with research to determine that the person that wrote the Bible or had the Bible written, the de Boone family, Elizabeth de Boone, was his wife, Jackie Green's 21st great-grandmother. So this was literally
Ancestry.com.
You're like,
there.
What? And now we have something when you go down to the second floor that ties into that story called the Joshua Machine. Because as it meant to them that their family had passed on a tradition of how the Bible impacted their life through a Bible, we now allow you to go into a booth on the second floor or take your iPhone or your Android and videotape your family members of how the Bible has impacted their life. And it won't get lost because it's in digital technology. Yeah. And you can take hundreds of testimonies of how the Bible has impacted your life and send them out to hundreds of your family members by Google Drive or Dropbox. Or if you don't know what I just said, just email them to your family members. It doesn't matter. They're out there. And that literally will generationally change your family just as the family said, oh my goodness, look at what happened with this Bible. How is it passed on?
Because it's really cool to watch that because there's a little booth and it's a sliding round door. It's a sliding, it's a round booth and you walk in there and you slide the door shut. And then you just look into the camera, gives you all the directions and everything. It's super easy. You got two minutes. And then if you walk outside, you'll see on the wall behind you, you can watch some of the testimonials that were given earlier in the day. And those are just people talk about what the Bible has meant to you.
Yes.
And it's one really incredible testimony after another.
It's amazing.
And most of us never have an opportunity to record a testimony like that at all.
I literally have churches that I say this to. The pastors are there, and I say it to them. The pastor looks at me and says, that's going to generationally change my church. I said, yeah, you could have every family member in your church take a testimony of how the Bible impacted their life and do it as a tradition for the family. And your great-great-granddaughters and your great-great-grandsons could see what you said about the Bible.
Such a cool idea and just one of the many opportunities at Museum of the Bible. Museumofthebible.org is the website. And you can jump there and start planning your trip right there in our nation's capital, literally about three blocks away from the Capitol, a block and a half off the mall. In Washington, D.C., all about the Bible, which we should all be about anyway. We'll be right back. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show, here with one of my friends from Museum of the Bible, Ryan Smith, who's been involved for over 2.5 years now and was traveling all over the place with the Greens and part of getting it open and getting people aware and now touring people through and being involved with getting the word out there. I'm up there once a month. You guys know that. I drag you guys up there with me once a month and interview people from the museum, and I take people with me, and you hear their reactions. We've had 9-year-olds. We've had 65-year-olds there. Just full disclosure, Museum of the Bible isn't paying me to do this. I don't make any money going up there. I spend money going up there and coming back. And I do it because it's important, because it's amazing. It's just like the gospel. It's something I feel obligated to shout from the rooftops. And because I know every single person that goes up there that I can have any impact on to get up to the Museum of the Bible will be blessed. And then we'll turn around and share that blessing with somebody else. Plus, and I mentioned this earlier, and I don't know if I said it on the air, like when Chick-fil-A gets attacked, we all go buy Chick-fil-A sandwiches on one Wednesday and blow the doors out of the place, and they set all kinds of records. Now we've got the Museum of the Bible in the capital of our nation. And I think we literally have I'll call it a moral obligation and a Christian obligation to support it, not for the sake of the Green family, but to support it because it's the Bible. It's our holy scriptures. And you will not be disappointed when you go. It just blows everybody away that goes, and it takes your faith to a level that it couldn't go otherwise because it's experiential. You're walking in and through things, and you're also finding out that little that little thing that you turn on that's in your pocket, and you have 70 versions or whatever. There's a lot of blood, sweat, and tears, Ryan, that brought that Bible from 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 years ago to my pocket today.
Incredible.
And I don't usually think about that.
We have a Tyndale fragment from 1536. Tyndale was obviously strangled and burned at the stake. And, you know, you're looking at this book. This is the first time the Bible was ever put into English. Less than 500 years ago, you couldn't even read the Bible in the language that we're speaking in.
Man.
And here is a Tyndale fragment that you're looking at thinking, what did this man go through? What was he thinking when he did this? And you can just plumb the depths of that, and you can stand in front of that and just soak it in.
Yeah.
Seriously. We do want to say thank you, seriously, for the people that love the Bible, support the Bible.
Amen.
We're a 501c3 nonprofit organization. We need people's help to come. We need people's help to think that this is something that's important, to get behind it and stuff. So we're appreciative so much of you being
Absolutely.
Able to be one of those people on the front line for
it's
that.
It's a no-brainer. And so explain to people basically what the three floors are.
Sure.
Let's do that right
Yeah,
now.
The three main floors of the museum. There are eight floors, but the three main floors are the impact floor, you know, answering the question, if you will, is it good? Is the Bible good or not? The impact floor. There's three parts to each of the main floors. That the parts of that floor are the impact of the Bible in America, the impact of the Bible in the world, and the impact of the Bible right now. It's kind of like a Times Square of the Bible, just everything that's on the internet. The next floor up is the story floor. That's saying, what's the story? You know, I don't know, or maybe I know a little bit, or maybe I know a lot, but what's the story? That's the Hebrew Bible walkthrough or Old Testament walkthrough, a 30-minute walkthrough of the Old Testament. The New Testament theater, an 11-minute overview of the New Testament from John's perspective. And then a world of Jesus of Nazareth. You're walking into Nazareth with period actors, kind of like Colonial Williamsburg, if you know what that is. They don't know what an iPhone. They're talking to you as first-century Nazareans. So that's the
yeah. Because I was in the synagogue and talking to the guy. I'm like, "Oh, you're gonna read from the Torah?" And he was a guy in the town.
Yeah.
I just clean up. I can't even read. That's for the that's really like, educated people.
He was staying in character.
And I'm like, okay, so what about this rabble rouser? This guy from Nazareth. What's this young upstart dude? Tell me about him. What's his name again? He goes, "Oh, you mean Jesus?"
Yep.
I'm like, "Yeah." He goes, "Oh man, It's been really challenging, and he didn't come out of
character
once.
Yeah, absolutely.
But you ask all kinds of questions when we were in the little kitchen. She's explaining all the different types of food and how everything works. But talk about the painstaking details of the Nazareth exhibit.
Oh my goodness, there's so many things that Jonathan Martin Creative did the paintings on those walls. I mean, I would see him at literally midnight, 1 a.m. painting these scenes with forced perspective to make you feel like you're on the hillsides of Nazareth and like you're in the Galilee, overlooking the Sea of Galilee from the top of Mount Arbel. Unbelievable. You're literally, people go, I'm here. You're transported
totally
in a way that you can't even imagine until you're there, because then you go, wow, I really feel like I'm in a town.
Are all the rocks all over the place really hand-painted?
14,000 hand-painted stones, yes.
What
else can you do than other? Because they said, look, we want it to look as so perfect that someone that either is from Nazareth or have gone to Nazareth would go, that's exactly what the rocks look like.
And what about the olive trees?
Yeah, that we took 500 pictures of the Garden of Gethsemane trees right outside the Eastern Gate near the Church of All Nations to make those trees almost exact replicas of what do those trees look like there that are just, hundreds and possibly thousands of years old, but hundreds of years old, to make them look exactly like that. So you literally can feel, these are the trees.
Yeah.
And so we were talking about the impact floor, the story floor, the last floor, the history floor. So that's saying, prove it to me. Show me the artifacts. Show me, it's true or not. Well, prove it to me. That's the history floor. And that's where we have the three parts that we've talked about there, the Dave Stotz drive-through, the chronological walk through the Bible, and then illuminations showing you what the past, present, and future of the translation.
And I was mentioning, because a lot of people that don't understand Bible translation, Bible transmission, how did it get here? Mm. How did it travel the last couple thousand years and get to us? And the amazing accuracy that it has. And a lot of people think, and a lot of people that come against the Bible think, it was one long telephone game, right? You tell somebody, then they tell somebody, then they tell somebody. That's not it at all. And you get into it and you start to realize, because the manuscript evidence of both the Old and the New Testament is overwhelming. There's not a single 6, ancient text.
6,000 extant copies. Yeah.
There's not a single ancient text in the world that has the kind of backup that the Bible does. But nobody questions Caesar's Gallic Wars. Nobody questions Plato.
Homer's Iliad.
Nobody questions that. But everybody questions
I agree. Homer wrote the Iliad and the Odyssey.
Yeah, of course.
But there's 8 extant copies, and the oldest copy is 1,000 years after he died.
Right. So you go through
We show you the Great Isaiah Scroll, predated about 125 BC, predating Christ, with all the prophecies intact in one contiguous scroll found 20 miles east of Jerusalem in the Qumran Caves, written by the Essene community. The oldest book of Isaiah before that was the Aleppo Codex or Codex Aleppo from 900 AD. We're talking a
thousand-year jump.
They put those two together. The differences were spelling variances and some vowel points.
After a thousand years.
I mean, look at that.
Yeah, just amazing.
You know, just kind of do the mental gymnastics to figure that, you know.
Mind-boggling. So I was taking a pastor friend through there with me, Mal Williams, who's just a great pastor, and he's on the radio. He's in a rural area of North Carolina. And he's carrying his big, it's probably a King James. He's carrying that with him the whole time as we work our way through the history floor. And about three-quarters of the way through, on the opposite side from where you start, he's just got this kind of heavy, somber look on his face. And he's not saying much, which is abnormal. And I'm like, so what do you think of all this? And he's like, man, it's overwhelming. I said, did your Bible just get a lot heavier? Realizing and seeing it for yourself.
That's awesome.
Everything that it took, all the dedication, literally the blood, the murder, the sacrifice, the detail, the commitment to bring all that stuff around so that today I can flip my phone on and look at any version I want.
Right.
It's really overwhelming and encouraging.
Yeah.
It really is.
You see, you know, we have something called Book of Books, and that shows all the seven traditional texts of the Bible. It's 14 total when you add the variances of each. And, you know, here's a book written over 1,600 years by dozens of authors that didn't even know each other. I mean, obviously, Job did not know Peter and Moses did not know Paul. They didn't even live in the same millennia. And it's written in at least three languages and in at least three countries, probably more like four or five. And we color code all the Bibles to show you how alike that they are. Man. And I say, folks, come look at this and just I don't tell you what to think. You think what you're going to think on your own, but just look at the facts and you think about it on your own. Just look at it from a historical, like, literally like an academic perspective, just look at what's presented and then go from there.
Yeah, you end up like, wow, that's why I say it's so encouraging. Because a lot of people, I think there's unfortunately a lot of Christians that think their faith is built on sand and it's a hope so. No, it's an I know so. And you start looking at that and you start looking at the continuity over all those years and you're like, holy cow, this thing is way more powerful perhaps than I thought. And it's way more substantiated than I thought. Why is it so important that we get there, especially this year?
Well, you know, this is the first year that we've been open. You know, just to be able to say, hey, I went the first year the Museum of the Bible opened. This is going to be something that's generational, folks.
Yeah,
you're going to be able to, I mean, it's like, how would you like to be the first year that Disney World was ever opened?
You know, that's
pretty cool. But for what it will do for you, because when you can walk through something that has had so many scholars, over 100 scholars from 60 different universities from around the world, putting the best information and knowledge that they have together, to literally speak into you so that you can see something, hear something, and then do something, that is an experience that literally has been paid forward to you and for you to come reap the benefits of the time that they've spent.
Partake of that.
It would literally, your family would be blessed from it. I mean, why? Because they're going to see something that they can't see anywhere else because they're going to be living it kinesthetically.
Yeah. Yeah, you literally can't access it. You can't have this experience anywhere else. And in the first year, really the goal being a million visitors this year in 2018. And that's a big deal because we know there's all kinds of people that want to see the Museum of the Bible fail. I mean, that's just the reality of it. That's the world we live in.
Sure.
And I'm sure there's plenty of newspapers and media outlets in Washington, D.C. that would like to see the Museum of the Bible fail. And it's like when we talk about Christian movies and everybody's rah-rah, sis-boom-bah, we got to go support them in their opening weekend. Well, this is the opening year, and it's the same challenge.
That's where it's cool. We have a John the Baptist video, and in about 10 minutes, we tell the story of John the Baptist. Obviously, Salome dances in front of Herod Antipas. He says, you could have up to half my kingdom. What do you want? She says, the head of John the Baptist on a platter, because her mother told him to say that. And it ends with the iconic verse, John saying, and this is, you know, the grass withers and the flower fades, but the word of the Lord stands forever.
Man. Isn't that incredible? Do you think you fully grasp yet the meaning behind what you're spending your time on?
There's no way. I don't think I can. It's just like the Bible. It's just like people throughout the ages. I mean, did anybody understand what they were doing when they did it? I mean, they have what they think at that time, but they don't know where it goes from there.
Yeah, you don't. But the impact of it, the history of it, the story of it, all of it, which is, we would all say, Ryan, of course, you would say it, I would say it, just about everybody listening would say, yeah, the Bible changed my life. Well, let it change your life again.
It's where you put it out there. Put your bread out on the water.
Put it out on the water. Let it change your life again. Go get into it. Go experience it in a way that you simply can't any other way.
I just say one last quick thing.
Sure.
People pray for us. share the museum with other people and support by, you know, getting onto the Million Names Wall or coming and visiting us, please. We thank you so much.
Yeah, talk about it, but get there as soon as you can. And if there's any way possible, get there before the end of the year so that we can show our nation, we can show the media, we can show the world that we truly love and support the Bible. Museumofthebible.org is the website. This is Steve Noble on The Steve Noble Show. And God willing, we'll talk again real soon.